Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, a conversation designed to help leaders go further faster. Today, we're continuing our discussion from last month and talking about the benefits of only doing what you can do. Andy, today we're going to continue our discussion on this idea of playing to our strengths and delegating our weaknesses. And last time, you kind of gave us the target on the wall.
Yeah, the target to shoot for, the thing to lean into is the idea of only doing what only you can do. Only do what only you can do. That is, exploit your strengths, delegate your weaknesses, exploit your strengths, and don't spend a whole lot of time trying to get good at things you're never going to be good at.
But what if we don't? I mean, what's the downside of ignoring this principle?
Well, since I spent about 8 or 9 years ignoring this principle, I know pretty well the downside. The first one, the obvious one, is that my effectiveness as a leader is severely diminished. If I do things I don't do well, things don't go well. That's sort of the bottom line. I think for most leaders, when they do things they don't do well, things don't go well for the entire organization. So for me, if I dip into logistics, if I dip into event planning, you know, I don't do well, things don't go well. It's really better for me to attend those meetings but not run those meetings.
Well, now that's an interesting idea to most people. The leader of the organization attending rather than leading the meeting.
Yeah, in fact, this is a big idea, an important idea. I think for any leader who wants to be involved in or have give input into an area where they're not the person, the go-to person, they should not lead the meeting. They should learn to attend and participate as a participant, but not feel the need to sit at the end of the table and drive the meeting. For me, every week I sit in two meetings, or just about every week I sit in two meetings where I don't lead the meeting. I'm just a participant. And for me, I had to learn to do this. Julie Arnold, who's been with us from the beginning, leads one of those meetings. And on many occasions, especially in the first years, after the meeting, she would call me aside in her very diplomatic way, say, "Andy, you can't say that, Andy. You can't weigh in so heavily, Andy, because, again, even though you're not leading the meeting, you're the boss. And so your words weigh 1,000 pounds. Yeah. And so I've had to learn to participate in meetings, but not lead meetings. And I have no business leading certain kinds of meetings because those are areas where they are not my strength and I don't need to be the one making decisions. But at the same time, I want to participate. So I think for any leader who recognizes as they look throughout their organization, here's an area where I need to be involved, but that's just not my thing.
Right.
I think some great advice is don't lead those meetings and learn how to be a helpful participant and learn how to have your ideas ignored or trumped. Because, again, you may be the boss, but you're not the smartest person in the organization, and that's not your thing.
Yeah. Now, you said there are really three downsides, the first being that the leader's effectiveness has diminished.
Yeah.
So what's the second?
The second one is that all the other leaders in the organization's effectiveness is diminished.
Okay.
Because, again, when I jump into an area where I'm just creating trouble, things I don't do well, so things don't go well, the leaders, the people who've been given responsibility for the areas, basically I'm interfering.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, I interfere. They don't do as good a job as they would have done normally. I'm frustrated because what they didn't do, they're frustrated because I interfered or I said, well, you have to do this or I really think you ought to do this. And over time, what you end up with, Lane, are employees or other leaders in the organization sitting around trying to guess what the boss wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what would Andy do?
Right.
Or what would Lane do? And that's terrible for an organization. So, again, if I don't play to my strengths, I begin to interfere in other areas. Other people find themselves trying to guess what I would do instead of trying to make the best organizational decision. And consequently, they don't shine the way they could shine as leaders either.
We end up with guessers instead of leaders.
Yeah, they're all trying to guess what I would do rather than actually lead their departments.
Yeah. So what's the third consequence?
The third consequence is related to the other two, and it's essentially this. When leaders don't play to their strengths, it's very difficult to get and keep great leaders in the organization. And let me use a John Maxwell illustration to explain this. John teaches that if you think about leadership on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like the greatest leader ever, 1 being a person who has very little or maybe no leadership skills, he argues that if a person is an 8, they're going to attract 6s and 7s.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a 6, they're going to attract 4s and 5s. So let's assume that you're a level 8 leader, but you're a level 8 leader when you are playing to your strengths. Well, what happens is if you begin to economize on your strengths, cheat on your strengths, take shortcuts with your strengths so you can try to develop weaknesses, instead of being a level 8 leader, you're a level 7 or a level 6, which means you're only going to track 3s and 4s or 4s and 5s. Now, I realize it's kind of hard to stereotype people in terms of numbers, but I think the overall principle is true, that great leaders attract great leaders. But great leaders are at their best when they're playing to their strengths. So if on an ongoing basis an organizational leader doesn't play to their strength and delegate their weaknesses, they're never at their best, which means they will never be able to attract other leaders who would be willing to follow that kind of leader. So the leader's effectiveness is diminished, the other leaders in the organization's effectiveness is diminished, and the ability to get and keep great leaders is severely diminished.
Wow. Well, in the clip we're about to listen to, you talk about the corporate and the personal win that takes place when a leader gets this right.
Right.
So we're going to listen and come back and unpack it.
Here's the outcome of this for you and your organization. I love this. This is so huge. Letter A. Personally, here's the advantage to you. You will find it much easier to establish and maintain a sustainable pace. You will find it much easier to establish and sustain a sustainable pace. Here's a tip. This is a secret. Don't let this one slip by. Stress is often related to what you are doing, not how much you are doing. This is huge. The stress that you feel in ministry is more related to what you are doing, not how much you are doing. When you're in your sweet spot, you can't get enough. You're outside your sweet spot. You want to get out of the ministry. The reason you are so worn out is because of not so much because of how much you do, but because you're spending so much time in areas you have no business in. It sucks the life out of you. Isn't that true? If you're not a counselor and you have to counsel, right? But if you're not a communicator and you've been given 8 weeks to communicate, you'd rather go chop wood. That's what my father-in-law says. He goes to this little church in middle Georgia, and they pass around the Sunday school quarterly. And whoever's next has to teach the next week. He told me, he loves God. He'd say, Andy, I would rather chop wood than teach Sunday school. And you know, he's a great child. He's great at a lot of things, but teaching Sunday school isn't his thing. You see, part of why you're so stressed is because you have allowed yourself or you've allowed other people to force you into spending too much time in the area you aren't gifted and called, and it wears you out. And you are about to jettison ministry. You're about to discount your call. You're about to quit something way larger than you have any business thinking about because you violated this simple principle. The other huge advantage or the win for you is letter B, corporately. You will end up with an organization that reflects your strengths and not your weaknesses. It's so fun to me to get asked questions about things in our church that I have nothing to do with, and I say, you know what? It is awesome, isn't it? I don't have anything to do with that. That's why it's awesome. I stay out of it. Now, I want to give you some practical things to do to get started. Getting started. Discovery questions. Don't answer these now, but I plead with you to spend some time on these. Last night when I pulled this out and was getting ready for today, I sat down again. This isn't preacher talk. And I sat down and I just kind of created some space mentally last night. And I went through these questions again. Because this is a constant renewal of the mind when it comes to leadership. What do you do that is almost effortless from your perspective, but it seems like a daunting task to others? What do you do that is almost effortless from your perspective, but seems like a daunting task to others? You need to know the answer to that question. You know what it is for me? I can sit down with you in your mediocre outline and I can turn it into a great sermon. And I can do it fast. And I sit down with our leaders and our communicators and I zip through it and bam, bam, bam. And they're all just like, how did you do that? And I go, I have no idea. But don't ask me to organize camp, please. Finding the bottom line and content and driving to a point and organizing material around it and ripping out the stuff you don't have any business saying. I mean, it's just bring it on, bring it on. I love curriculum meetings. I tell our children's ministry and our high school ministry, when you've got a day set apart to drill down on bottom lines for Bible stories and curriculums, can I come, can I come, can I come? I love it. It's effortless for me. What's effortless for you? What's the thing that people go, wow, you're just good at that? You need to pay attention to that. Number two, in what areas do people consider you the go-to person? What facets of your job energize you? What facets of your job energize you? Lean into that. What facets, what do you wish you could stop doing? Don't say everything. You're just tired, okay?
What do you wish you could stop doing? Now, please don't turn me off. Don't say, in your world, you got 300 staff. Listen, you need to know this for you. What organizational environments are you drawn to? What environments do you absolutely try to avoid? You need to know the answers to those questions. Even if you cannot act on them today, you need to know the answers. And here's why, because it allows you to sort of clarify in your mind, what do I need to begin doing that only I can do? This will make you a better leader. It'll make your department, your division, or your organization a much better organization. And then the last thing is this discovery project. This will take some time. You'll love this. Develop the ideal job description in your current job. In your current job. If you were going to continue to be the middle school director, the children's director, the senior pastor, the administrative, if you had all control over all things, what would the ideal job description for you be in your current role? And then if you have time, go ahead and write yourself an ideal job description for ministry in general. Just daydream, just think big, just dream. Get the target in mind, because this whole process allows you to discover what you need to be doing anyway and what you need to be focused on eventually. And again, this is not a decision you make today. This is something you begin to shoot for and aim for and decide and lean your leadership into. I love this quote. It's by Howard Hendricks. Howard Hendricks is about to retire from Dallas Seminary, I hear. He was a dear, dear seminary teacher. I mean, he affected my life more than anybody else in academic environment. Here's what he said. In a letter to seminary alumni, which would be me and some of you, Dr. Howard Hendricks underscored the importance of this principle when he wrote, "If anything has kept me on track all these years," and that's a big statement for a guy in his late 80s in ministry, isn't it? "If anything has kept me on track all these years, it is being skewered to this principle of central focus. There are many things I can do, but I have to narrow it down to the one thing I must do. The secret of concentration is elimination. The secret of concentration is elimination. Only do what only you can do, because the less you do, the more you accomplish."
Andy, before you gave us the discovery questions, you said in the talk that you recently went through these yourself. Really?
Yeah. As I sat down to prepare or to give that talk, and I've given it before, I found myself drilling back down on those questions. And I do this on a pretty regular basis, because as our organization has grown, I've learned all of this the hard way, okay? You know, years ago, I was clueless about this, but because I've learned the hard way, I realize every time we add a campus, every time we grow, every time we add complexity, as the leader of the organization, I'm responsible for sitting down and asking the question, what do I need to give up? What am I doing too much of? Where am I beginning to be distracted by the growth and spending time in things I have no business in? In fact, my assistant, Diane Grant, I've talked about this so much. On many occasions, especially just about every January, she'll say to me, okay, as we begin a new year, what do you want to stop doing? What do you want to give up? When we go through the calendar year, we'll look at the whole year in the calendar. She'll say, now, is there any of this stuff you need to quit doing? Is there anything categorically that you need to take off the calendar? So I think this is not an exercise a leader does once or twice. I think in a growing organization, every leader needs to constantly go back to these kinds of questions to make sure, number one, they're really playing to their strengths, and number two, to make sure they're not being accidentally dragged into other areas that they have no business in. Now, we all know in the ebb and flow of life and the rhythm of organizational life, there are going to be times that you got to dive in deep in areas that you don't want to stay in for very long. That's just necessary. But in terms of the overall rhythm of the organization, we've got to play to our strengths and delegate our weaknesses.
Yeah. Well, that obviously answers the question, what do you need to stop doing? What is it that only you can do in our organization?
Well, I think I have two key roles here, and correct me if I'm wrong. I think my primary roles are, because of the nature of our organization being a church, that I have to preach great sermons every week. And the challenge for me is, I'm talking to a very educated audience. I've been with them for many, many years, over 20 years in some cases. So the pressure for me is, I've got to set the bar high in terms of communication, and I've got to set the bar high in terms of content and, attracting people. So, in terms of my calendar and what I do during the week, the priority, and my assistant knows this, the priority for me is I've got to have the time I need to create the best message possible for Sunday. So that's one of those things that's a focus for me. The other thing is to constantly keep the vision of our organization out in front of the staff, out in front of our congregants, out in front of really anybody that's involved with us as an organization. And I feel like those are the two things that if I get those right over and over and over and over, anything else that comes up, we can fix. And anything else that comes up, there are people in this organization that could fix them better than I ever could. Now, obviously, my job description is broader than those two things, but in terms of where my time is focused and what I give my time to and what my assistant calendars my time to, it's really those two things.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think a lot of our listeners would be interested, if you're willing to share them, really, what are some of those things you've quit doing?
Yeah. When we first started our organization, going back to what we said last time about things being natural and necessary, I did all of our groups training. In fact, I did a lot of our training. And the reason I did a lot of training, I wanted to set the standard. I wanted to set the tone of what we were doing as an organization. And then as I did some of those same trainings over and over and over, we brought people in to partner with me. And then eventually I just handed that off. On the pastoral side, as a pastor, I don't do weddings anymore. I don't do hospital visitation. I don't do a lot of the things that a traditional pastor does. And again, as the organization grew, those were things I handed off to people, as you know, who are much better than I'll ever be. In fact, as you know, the joke here is this. If Andy shows up at the hospital, it's worse than what the doctor told you, because that's not a role I play anymore. And in some of those traditional roles, that was difficult for me. Some of those things had to be essentially taken away from me. And when I gave them away, they were done better, they were done more efficiently, and again, I was able then to lean into the things that only I can do.
Yeah. At the beginning of the clip, you talk about sometimes as leaders, when we apply this principle, we can accidentally set an unsustainable pace for our leaders. In fact, as you were talking about it, a guy came to my mind who's on my team that I thought, wow, in practicing this, have I really created an unsustainable pace for him?
Yeah, you've unloaded so many things that you shouldn't be doing. Maybe he doesn't have time to get everything done right. That's a tension we all wrestle with as leaders. And you're right, if we don't get this right, we will offload things to people not without being sensitive to what they should be doing in the organization. And you can lose some of your best and brightest leaders by just giving them a lot of busy work as we, as the senior leaders, try to apply this principle.
Right. Obviously, we wouldn't do that on purpose. So what's the solution?
The solution is feedback loops. It's creating a culture to where you can talk about these things. And when I do our new employee orientation, one of the things I tell all our new employees is, I want you to work hard while you're here, but don't allow us to create an unsustainable pace for you. If you find yourself working way outside the boundaries of the hours we've given you, tell us. That's a fair conversation. And what happens in some organizations, I think leaders unintentionally create kind of a no whiner zone. You know, if anybody complains about how hard they're working or how many hours, they're considered a whiner and they're sort of written off and you're not committed and, you know, buck up and get with the program. And that's so unhealthy, because if you make great hires, you've hired people who have a strong work ethic and they're going to do their job. But if there's an unsustainable pace that the organization has created, then the organization has to look in the mirror and take responsibility for that. And then the other side of that is putting people in the wrong job to begin with. Because as I said early on in the clip, sometimes what stresses us out is not how much we do, but that we're doing the wrong things. Wow. You and I both have a friend who works here who worked for a sister organization, and they fired him. They let him go. And I heard through the grapevine that we'd hired him. And he went through all the right interview process, but I wasn't involved because that's one of those things I don't do anymore. I used to interview everybody, and I was told that I'm not a good interviewer, and it's best that I not interview people because I tend to try to sell them on the organization. Well, if they've turned in an application, you know, they're in. So that's something I don't do. But anyway, I heard that we hired this guy, and I was really concerned because I thought, well, if they let him go, you know, have we made a good hire? And he is a superstar here. I mean, the stuff that he creates and designs is some of the best stuff that we do. And what had happened is they just had him in the wrong slot. Mm. He is a doer. He's extraordinarily creative. They had him in management, you know, managing creative projects. So, again, You know, he was stressed out, they were stressed out, we're as happy as we can be. So the solution to this tension is to talk about it and to create within the organization opportunities for these things to surface and bubble up in an appropriate way, and then make sure that we're creating job descriptions that allow people to lean toward their strengths, and then over time begin to delegate some of those weaknesses.
Oh, that's great. Well, as we wrap up, any parting words on this principle?
I think the big takeaway from this is that list of questions at the end of this session, and I hope our audience will take the time to really think through those questions. The whole idea of writing out an ideal job description is a great idea. It's a bit time-consuming, but as people do that, they discover, I think, sometimes things about themselves, things they've never written down before that they would really like to do. And then when it's appropriate to present that to a boss, or just put it in a drawer and think toward that, pray toward that, hope to be hired toward that one day. But at the end of the day, to always remember, the less you do, the more you accomplish. And the less a leader does, the more a leader empowers other people around him or her to accomplish.
Landy, thanks so much for taking this time to talk with us today.
If you find these leadership principles helpful and would like to go deeper, check out the Andy Stanley Leadership Essentials DVDs. Each DVD includes both full talks as well as work team-focused segments, along with questions ideal for individual growth or use with your staff. In addition, each DVD includes Going Deeper bonus content. Head to northpointresources.org/leadership. That's northpointresources.org/leadership to learn more.